about the covenant that God desired to make with His people. And He delivered the Ten Commandments to the Israelites, and what was their reaction to that? Not all at once. Yeah, they were afraid, and they told Moses, "Look, you talk to God. You talk to God. You tell us what He said. We don't want to hear anymore. We're fearful." And so we talked a little bit about that. So they're still at Sinai. They're still at the mountain. God is talking to Moses, and He's continuing what He started at the end of this, the last chapter that we talked about last Wednesday night. He's going to give them ordinances. The commandments that were given to the people were, you know, in one way they were simple, in other ways they were also pretty comprehensive. But what did God intend to make of these people? Pardon? Okay, that's right. So God, being the one who created them, He knew exactly what they needed, right? If they're going to be a holy nation, life is complex, and so He knew that what they would need would be a lot more detail. And what we have here is not in as much detail as we'll see later in Leviticus and also in Deuteronomy. And we have some evidence of that tonight we'll look at, and I think some of that was in your class book as well. As we look at these, it struck me that what these Israelites, the only thing that these Israelites would have known of any law would be from where? Yeah. So they were in Egypt. This is the only thing they would have known. So I thought it was pretty interesting to go back and look to see in the time period that they were there, is there anything that's known about what the Egyptian law would have been? Now, I'll let you guess what it was based on. What would have been based on? That too, but based on little g gods, right? Because you remember how many of them that we said that they had. I thought some of this was pretty interesting. Egyptian law was based on the central cultural value of, I'm going to call that Ma'at. And Ma'at was actually the god of peace and harmony. Which had been instituted at the beginning of time by the gods. In order to be at peace with oneself, one's community, and the gods, all one had to do was to live a life of consideration, mindfulness, and balance in accordance with Ma'at. Now, what do you get from just that first paragraph right there? Well, right. Yeah. But what I keyed in on, in order to be at peace with oneself, and maybe that's where you were going with that, there's no absolute truth. If I'm at peace with myself, then that's what's right. And so, continuing on, another example, infidelity was considered a serious offense only if the individuals involved made it one. A husband whose wife had an affair could forgive her and let the matter go, or he could prosecute. If he chose to take his wife to court and she were found guilty, the punishment could be divorce and amputation of her nose or death by burning. An unfaithful husband who was prosecuted by his wife could receive up to 1,000 blows but did not face the death penalty. As the nuclear family was considered the basis for a stable community, adultery was a serious offense, but again, only if those involved brought it to the attention of the authorities or in some cases if a neighbor informed against them. Since the prevailing belief was that a person who had been charged was guilty until proven innocent, witnesses were often beaten to make sure they were telling the truth. Once one had been charged with a crime, even if one were finally found innocent, one's name was kept on record as having been a suspect. As such, public disgrace seems to have been as great a deterrent as any other punishment. In general, if the crime was serious, such as rape, murder, theft on a large scale, or tomb robbing, the penalty was death or disfigurement. Murderers were beaten and then fed to crocodiles, burned to death, or executed in other unpleasant ways. Thieves usually suffered amputation of the nose, hands, or feet. So Should, like you say, some of it hasn't changed a whole lot. In other ways, this is something that's not anywhere close to what they're about to see. And it just struck me, if that's what you were around, now remember they were slaves, so they were subject to probably much harsher treatment because they were slaves, but they would have witnessed some of this, I believe, in their daily lives. Anybody have any comments on that? Right. Yeah. Sure. Right. And there's no holy in this, is there? There's no be holy for I am holy. Right. Well, and one part that I left out that I intended to put up there was that really the top section there included a section that said that if they were trying to figure out who was really telling the truth, you know, you're presumed guilty at first, but if they were trying to figure out who was telling the truth or not, they would appeal to the gods to try to figure that out, and they would depend on an oracle from that God to say whether or not you're guilty or you were innocent. You know, how'd you like to be at the whim of a piece of wood or, you know, a piece of metal or something like that? So,
I assume this is the first set of spiritual laws that the Israelites had, because, I mean, they were under, before this, they were under patriarchal dispensation, but I would imagine there were any written laws concerning that. I mean, they have the secular laws that they used in Egypt, but this appears to be the first time they were given written.
Right, and we'll see the thread that runs through that, I think, as Brian said, as we keep talking about some of these. Right. Yeah, and I just put myself in their place. If I had been in favor of Moses talking to God and then telling us what God said, then Moses comes down and says, all right, here's what he said. And then there's all this tremendous detail. And you're thinking, okay, well, I guess that really makes good common sense to me because it's fair. And we see a sense of fairness as we go through there. But then there are other things that you can look at and you can just see God's wisdom and how he set that up. So that's exactly right. All right, we will go through the questions tonight, and Lamar, we'll start on your side with question one.
Is the Mosaic law approved, forbid, or regulate slavery? Well, I put it regulated. It didn't say you had to have a slave. It didn't say you must not have a slave.
Right.
It was like if and when.
You know, that's exactly the way I put it. If I'm correct about this, the King James Version uses servant there, and the English Standard Version, I believe, uses slave. And I understand that this is translated house servant or bond servant. So when we hear the word slave, what do we think about? Under bondage and probably treated pretty harshly, right? You know, we immediately kind of jump to that conclusion. So over in Leviticus, the 25th chapter, it says, if your brother becomes poor beside you and sells himself to you, you shall not make him serve as a slave. He shall be with you as a hired worker and as a sojourner. He shall serve with you until the year of the Jubilee. Then he shall go out from you, he and his children with him, and go back to his own clan and return to the possession of his fathers. For they are my servants, whom I brought out of the land of Egypt. They shall not be sold as slaves. You shall not rule over him ruthlessly, but shall fear your God. And so I guess it's possible that what these are is, this is a a way that maybe the poor were taken care of. And if they sold themselves to you, you certainly have an obligation to treat them a certain way. Adel? Right. Well, and if I'm destitute and I don't have any way to provide for my family, maybe this was an opportunity for me to do that. And knowing that I would be treated a certain way, because after all, as we'll see in just a minute, I'm not from a surrounding nation. I'm a fellow Hebrew. So I think that obviously makes a difference. And fast forwarding to Exodus, the 23rd chapter, we'll see that they were also supposed to rest on the Sabbath day. So that doesn't sound like a harsh treatment there. And then as you look further on, he states that the Hebrew servant would serve 6 years and be released in his seventh year. And then they would also be freed in the year of Jubilee, which was every 50th year. And as I understand it, that would mean that even if I hired on to somebody as their bond servant or whatever, sold myself to them, if the 50th year came around next year, I was free to go. So think about that in terms of bond servant and not slavery as we would think about that. All right, question number two. Yeah, and I think the answer here depends, and see if I'm right about this, depends on whether or not he was married when he became a servant. If he was unmarried when he became a servant, then he was liberated alone. If he was married when he became a servant, then his wife did leave with him. But if during his service as a slave or as a servant, his master gave him a wife and then children were born, the man went free by himself. The law said that the wife and children belonged to the master. And this is another situation where we might look at some of this and say, you know, this is very shocking. You know, that's his family. But there were property rights. And this is property that we're talking about. But what provision was made, though, if the wife and children couldn't go with him, what could the servant do? Right, yeah. If he loves his wife and children, he could decide to stay. And if he decided to stay, what would be done? Yeah, well, and I have a vision of that a little bit more barbaric, and that's me going right over to that post over there and somebody putting an awl through there, which doesn't sound very good at all. So it says that the master would do that. He would bring him to God, is the way the English Standard Version has it. And I imagine that means before God, so God is maybe a witness to that. His ears pierced through, and he would be his servant forever. With so many of these, you know, God makes this provision for that. It would seem like that God knew that this is something that was going to be necessary, and so this is God's wisdom in thinking about this and making sure that, you know, with his people, he provided for that. Any questions? Any comments? All right. Question number three.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is another one that kind of makes you scratch your head just a little bit and think through it, and you look at the difference between males and females and how they're treated. But you know, verse 8 says, it uses the phrase, designated her for himself. And then verse 9 says, designated for his son. So it seems to be that a concubine or a secondary wife or something like that. But it does say, if she does not please them, there was a remedy. She could be redeemed or bought back, probably by one of her relatives. But as Anne said, but the law prohibited her from being sold to a foreign people. So all of a sudden, this one does not go out, in 6 years like the male does, but she doesn't please me. But because even though I believe she's property, I can't just take her and sell her as a slave to a foreign people. Right. Yeah, again, I think God's provision for that, because he could see that happening, and you're exactly right, just couldn't throw her out for no way to provide for herself. All right, question 4. Right. Whoever strikes a man so that he dies shall be put to death. Period. So that was the way God looked at that. Genesis 9 and verse 6 says, whoever sheds man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. I guess let's read on here. Numbers, the 35th chapter. Moreover, and this is an example of where it gives a little bit more detail for us about how God feels about this. Moreover, you shall accept no ransom for the life of a murderer who is guilty of death, but he shall be put to death. And you shall accept no ransom for him who has fled to his city of refuge, that he may return to dwell in the land before the death of the high priest. You shall not pollute the land in which you live, for blood pollutes the land, and no atonement can be made for the land for the blood that is shed in it, except by the blood of the one who shed it. You shall not defile the land in which you live, in the midst of which I dwell, for I, the Lord, dwell in the midst of the people of Israel. So, again, he's saying, if you're going to be my people and I'm your God, I'm going to live in the midst of you, and there are reasons that I can't be among you if you're going to be sinful, if you're going to shed blood. And that's a theme that we'll see throughout. But let's go ahead and take question 5. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're answering question number 5. We'll see. We'll see if you answered question 5. Who's got question 5? Right. Yep, Numbers 35, Deuteronomy 19, and then Joshua 20. So we'll learn about that later. But as Adel says, look at verse, this was willful murder that we're talking about, but look at verse 13, the phrase where it says, but God let him fall into his hand. What do you think that means? Well, I've got Ecclesiastes 9:11, time and chance. And if you're familiar with that verse, time and chance happen to us all. And so I believe that that may have something to do with that.
They say
Right.
And they would
attribute to God. Well, you're right. So something happens and then they ascribe it to that. Yeah, exactly. Read 22:2. Right. Yeah, things were set in motion, but it was set in motion by the person who desired to do something something bad. All right, question number 6. Yes, serious business, right? It's a willful breaking of the commandment given in chapter 20 and verse 12. So we see what God feels about that, because you know these verse 15 and verse 17, very short and to the point. Note that it's not only striking the parent, but cursing carried the death penalty also. And you think God feels less strongly about that today than He did then? He feels just the same, I'm sure. Yeah, I agree with what you say about the underlying principle, and I think a lot of that stuff is still true today, but you do kind of get that flavor with some of the questions. Deuteronomy 21, a little bit more information. If a man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and though they discipline him will not listen to them, then his father and mother shall take hold of him and bring him out to the elders of his city, at the gate of the place where he lives, and they shall say to the elders of his city, This our son is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard. Then all the men of the city shall stone him to death with stones. So you shall purge the evil from your midst, and all Israel shall hear and fear. So yeah, you're right. It's an examination of exactly what God said when He delivered this to Moses, and this is exactly what He intended. But I think the principle that we apply today is those things that we do find in the New Testament about honoring our father and mother. Well, you know, He'd appointed those judges, so that's the thought that I had. Right. Well, and we don't have tons of detail here. I mean, obviously, if you had the parents there bringing the kid out there and saying that this is what happened. I mean, it's a pretty serious thing to stone him to death. You would think that they would say, take it under consideration and see what evidence there was of that. But just an examination here of exactly what God said is what we're doing here tonight. Anything further? Right. And how he found them when he was going to be his, when they were going to be his people, right? Yep, good point. Yeah, among other things as well, right? All right, question 7. Yeah, you know, notice that kidnapping a person and selling them to another as a slave is seen as just as bad as murdering somebody. So that penalty was death, right? All right, question 8. Not unlike we see today, right? You know, you have two men fighting or arguing, and then it escalates, and one man injures the other, so he can't work. Then you've got to pay restitution for that. You know, just like we see today. So the part B of that is, however, if the man can recover from the injury, the guilty party was only required to pay for his medical recovery and for his lost time. Is that the same thing? Right. Right. Yeah. But the same principles, right? He talks then about beating a slave to death. And, you know, I wonder if what he's talking about here is, we already talked about how they weren't supposed to treat them very ruthlessly if they were bond servants or house servants or something like that. But over in Leviticus 25, as for your male and female slaves whom you may have, you may buy male and female slaves from among the nations that are around you. You may also buy from among the strangers who sojourn with you and their clans that are with you who have been born in your land, and they may be your property. You may bequeath them to your sons after you inherit as a possession forever. You may make slaves of them, but over your brothers, the people of Israel, you shall not rule one over another ruthlessly. So you have two sets right there. You really have a servant who is, as we described earlier, who is your fellow Hebrew, and then looks like that they were also allowed to have slaves from the nations around them. So this may be talking about that. So clearly seen as property there. As we look at that. All right, question 9. Yeah, this, I think the King James Version says, uses the word fruit. Does it not? The English Standard Version says, so that her children come out. And I thought it was interesting that the word fruit in Hebrew is, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, but I'll spell it for you, Y-E-L-E-D. And that same word is translated in the King James 72 times as child, sometimes as boy, son, or young man. So, if you think about it, I'm not sure we need to make the point in this audience here, but the use of this Hebrew word to describe the aborted fetus is the same one used to describe a child after its birth. So one and the same. So I guess an application there for us to take. Question 10. When you think about why that was given, what is our, and I guess you have to look at it from the other side of that. What is our tendency if we're done wrong? What do we like to take? We like to take vengeance, right? Yeah, right. All right, you got me. I'm really going to get you. And so I think the wisdom of this is it's limiting. You know, it's, I think Brian used the word restraint, I believe. And I think that's limiting this as well. So, Chad, you talked about, I think, verse 22, where it talks about judges as well. So, you know, the judges here might determine the punishment. But over in Leviticus 24, a little bit more detail, whoever takes a human life shall surely be put to death. Whoever takes an animal's life shall make it good, life for life. If anyone injures his neighbor as he has done it, it shall be done to him. Fracture for fracture, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. Whatever injury he has given a person shall be given to him. Whoever kills an animal shall make it good, and whoever kills a person shall be put to death. So, again, I think it's pretty plain there. All right, question 11. I would want them to hit me right in the mouth and lose a tooth and go, is what I thought about that one right there. So this is another example, I think, of why that word slave really is probably fellow Hebrew right there. All right, question 12. Well, and this would have been something that would have been a possibility, right? You had so much livestock there. So the ox was supposed to be stoned to death, but the meat could not be eaten. The owner then was clear of any responsibility. But if the ox was known to have done this in the past and the owner hadn't taken any steps to prevent it, you know, putting it up or whatnot, and it gored a man or woman to death, the ox was stoned, but also what happened? Owner was stoned to death also. We talked about that same principle, Genesis 9. Whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed, for God made man in his own image. The animal was killed because it had taken a human life, and we can get some idea there of just how God feels about human life. Verse 32, he talks about slaves, because he talks about them in the sense that they were property. The guilty animal was stoned, but the owner simply must pay 30 shekels if that was a slave that was involved. All right, question 13. And really just basic principles of safety here, just like we might see today. So if a man dug a pit, you know, they had water storage and grain storage and that thing. So he doesn't cover it up so that an animal falls into it that belongs to somebody else. The owner of the pit has to pay for the animal. But what was done to the dead animal at that point? Whose property was the dead animal's? Yeah. I'm going to get to that in a minute, Jeremy, but yeah. If I have the pit that's dug and then an animal falls into it that belongs to Lamar and I pay for it, all of a sudden I've got an animal in a pit that I've got to get out. And I probably would rather not have done that. I probably would rather you take your animal and me help you get it out. But you got a dead animal in a pit at this point. But well, that's a good point. You're right. Yeah, there's no benefit. Yeah. Exactly. You're right. But then, as Jeremy said, he gives laws regarding one man's ox injuring another. If the animal was killed, then the live one was sold, then the money was divided. So you had that happen. But the dead ox was also divided between them. But if the ox was known to do this, then he paid for the dead ox in full, but it was then his. So just fair dealing with one another, like we've talked about a couple of different times. Question 14. Yeah, so caught with the property versus not caught with property. All right, question 15. Yeah, if the thief was caught breaking in at night and was killed in the act, then the homeowner was not held accountable. If the break-in was during the day and he was caught then, there was accountability to the one who kills him. Isn't that what you get out of that? Night versus day? Tell me if I'm wrong about that. But then it looks like at the last part of verse 2 means that the thief would make restitution. If he has nothing, then he would be sold himself. Agreed. All right, question 16. Up here at the front, I think. Yeah, just a simple fairness, right? It's something that we would really expect today. Question 17. Mr. Jesse, you got 17?
Yeah, so in this case, someone trusts his items to his neighbor, and then the items were stolen. If the thief is found, then restitution is made. If not, the one who had the items has to prove his innocence. And again, I think the English Standard Version says, by coming near God. King James Version says, unto the judges. So there again, I believe it's the judges who were that were appointed that would have to take care of that. Question 18. Yeah, just a common sense, you know, fairness is the same things that we would see today. Question 19. And he couldn't divorce her all his days, right? we may not get through that. Deuteronomy 22. If a man is found lying with the wife of another man, both of them shall die, the man who lay with the woman and the woman. So you shall purge the evil from Israel. If there is a betrothed virgin and a man meets her in the city and lies with her, then you shall bring them both out to the gate of that city and you shall stone them to death with the stones. The young woman, because she did not cry for help, though she was in the city, and the man, because he violated his neighbor's wife, so you shall purge the evil from your midst. But if in the open country a man meets a young woman who is betrothed, and the man seizes her and lies with her, then only the man who lay with her shall die. But you shall do nothing to the young woman. She has committed no offense punishable by death, for this case is like that of a man attacking and murdering his neighbor, because he met her in the open country, and though the betrothed young woman cried for help, there was no one to rescue her. That's example of detail where you read it and you're trying to think through all of those situations. And as we've said already, we try to compare that to our society today and what might happen, but it was completely different in those days. Anybody have any other comments or questions? I'm sorry we didn't get finished with the last couple. Good point. Thank you. Good point.